everyone, and welcome to minute 157 of season 8 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we fubar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again on this special Sunday episode, in order to finish everything by D-Day in another 10 days or so, in another 12 days, is Alan Sanders of the Alan Sanders Show. Welcome back to the show, Alan.
Hey, Rob. Thanks so much for having me back. Really appreciate it. Happy Sunday, everybody.
Happy Sunday. Minute 157 begins with Miller continuing to reiterate his final class in life.
Mm-hmm.
And ends with a narration. While the scene is moving along a little bit. So yesterday we ended things with the discussion as to what's really going on with Miller at this point and what's going on with Ryan. You know, Miller has basically said to Ryan, earn this.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan wasn't really sure exactly what he said. And then he reiterates it and he goes, earn it. Which is great. You know, because, you know, I've had guests over the last, over the whole season. Some say earn it, earn this. Some insisted on saying earn it, you know, because that's the line they know, because that's the quote that they remembered. Mm-hmm. So I like the fact that this quote, even though it's the same and similar at the same time, you know, about either earn this or earn it. You know, it can be interpreted both ways, and they both have almost exactly the same meaning, but there's a slight differences between them. You know, it's, one is, okay, earn this, earn what we have done for you and stuff like that. And, you know, earn it means earn the fact that you're worthy of being saved. So I like the slight nuance between those two things, even though, mm-hmm. again, essentially they're saying the exact same thing.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with you. It's a nuance. This to me means everything we just went through, all the carnage, all the fighting, all of the loss of life. Earn this, make this worthwhile with what we just went through. But I always looked at it as when he says earn it, almost more like a commander, like a captain to a soldier. Like, is almost adding a little extra, don't just earn this, earn it, like an order. However you want to look at it, there is a little distinction there.
Right. Earn what we've just done for you. It's, mm-hmm.
And I we said this yesterday, but you don't think about how small those two words are, whether you earn this and earn it. But wow, think about everything he means captured in the world, in the word this, what we just went through, this entire last, 15, 20 minutes of the movie, prepping for this, all this, finding him. The this is massive. It's a small word. It's a two-word sentence, and yet it's going to be with him for the rest of his life.
Correct. And again, it's something, as you mentioned yesterday at the end of the episode, it's something for all of us to take with us. And
I agree.
It's a simple, short, succinct message.
Mm-hmm.
You know, earn this, earn it. Either mm-hmm. way, you know, whatever you do in life, make sure that there's a good reason for it. And
in some ways, one of the things I often will talk about, not only on the radio, but when I'm invited to go talk to, let's say, some younger, like school groups or business leaders in the, like the, there's a club at the high school called the Future Business Leaders of America, FBLA, where the kids that involve in that club, they try to bring in guest speakers from the professional world, you know, hints and tips about things and careers and the soft skills. And one of the things I say a lot is, be an active participant in your life. Don't be a leaf on the wind and just say, I've got no control. I have to let someone else make a decision for me. I'll let my boss decide when it's time to promote me, or I'll let this, like, don't be a leaf on the wind, be an active participant in your own life. So basically wherever you are in life, earn it. Don't just hopefully you land on some random square because the wind blew there, focus. And when you think about it as earning, there's a verb there. You have to actually do something. You can't just happen automatically. You got to go do it.
Exactly. I mean, and it what's great is that this isn't even the first time in the movie that this is something that this is a theme that has come up. You know, this is something that you know we had when when they were in the church. You had Mike and Miller that were talking about it, and you know they said, "Oh, I hope he goes and creates a cure for cancer or a better form of light bulb or something like that." You know that that there's something about us going to save him that will, resonate within the entire world, not just in his life. You know, so like on the one hand, at the beginning, what before Miller's even met him, his idea is okay, this better be someone who's going to change the world. But his message now is not necessarily to Ryan to change the world, but make sure that what you do is worthy of everything. But again, it could also encompass, something in the world, but that I think is too heavy to say to somebody. You know, for him to say, "Well, I hope you will make some difference in the world," is a lot more is a lot heavier message for someone to have to take on and a heavy burden to take on than to say, "Okay, earn this, earn it." You know, however you interpret what I'm saying, it could be interpreted in so many different ways. And I think again, this is only my interpretation of it. Miller as a teacher, I jokingly said that okay, this was his final bit of teaching advice or whatever. But maybe there is something to it that he's basically saying to Ryan, look, I'm a teacher. I know the way that these things are. This you need to look at this situation over the course of the rest of your life and figure out how this will affect you positively, and that make it that the sacrifice that everyone has made for you here is worthwhile because you've gone on to do something for yourself, in the right way. I like that.
And I think along with that message, sometimes we get, I mean, all of us, when I say we in the current modern time now, not talking the greatest generation, we tend to think if we're not doing something super huge, well, then we haven't accomplished anything. And that adds to our, well, what have I really done? But it's not about the huge things. Did you make sure your kids had good experiences? Were you there on the sideline when they scored the goal or the touchdown or won the cheer competition? You know, so it doesn't have to be the big things. And so many times we get caught up on, and maybe it's because we live in a world of social media and influence and wow, look at, well, I got 1 million likes or 100,000 clicks or, but that's not what's important. Earnings your life can be a whole lot of small things all stacked back to back. You know, playing with your kids, making memories, game nights, making dinner together, showing your kids how to make your favorite meal. So that way, when they go to college and they call you, like, hey, tell me again how you make that meal. And you've got all these wonderful memories of positive things you've done to instill into the next generation. And I almost wonder, because we always talk about them as the greatest generation, how important it is for each of us to remember if we're parents and we're mentors in our community or we're leaders, if you will. How much are we doing to make sure that that next generation is being given the same kinds of examples and maybe even given the same message? Hey, it's going to be your world soon. Do something good with it.
Right. It's true. And again, it's a great little message both for Ryan and for us. You
Yeah,
know,
I agree.
coming from this teacher at the who do you think he knows that he's done for at this point?
You know, on the second watch, and when you kind of break it down this way, I think that's exactly why he says what he says. I think that's exactly why he pulled him in close to whisper, because he's losing his strength and he knows this is it. And his dialogue is so small. The words are powerful, but it's like this is about all he's got left. And he's not telegraphing with like some over-exaggerated breathing or anything, you know. I think he knows he's slipping, but he wants to just say one more thing.
And
I do think it's an
it
interesting choice. Well, before we get to, I'll before I say that, I just want to talk about his eyes, but I don't want to muddy this thought we're having right now. But I do think he knew he was dying, and then when I watch it the second time, I go, yeah, it's obvious now. He knew he was dying.
Sure. And what you know, even if you think about it more, the earn this, is it, is he talking about in you know, the in the singular or in the plural? Meaning, earn the fact that I'm dying, that I've died, or earn the fact that we've all sacrificed for you? Because earn this.
I want to go with
Earn
the
this.
more altruistic view that he's, what he's meaning is a lot of people have done a lot of things to get to this moment in time. Don't make it worthless. Don't make it all for nothing.
Right. Okay. Again, it could be interpreted both ways. I don't think that you know, that Miller is necessarily an altruistic, not, you know, a character only thinking of himself. You know, he's not being selfish here.
No.
You know, even by me saying, if he's referring to himself, earn this, it's not a selfish aspect of it, but he can only speak for himself. He can't speak for everyone else, and he might not know who else is alive and who's not. Like, he doesn't, you know, he knows that Jackson's dead. He saw Jackson die, or he saw the clock tower blow up with Jackson and Parker. That he knew. He doesn't see Mellish die. You know, he doesn't know what's happened to Upham. He knows that Ryben and Ryan are alive. That's all he knows. You know, so it could be, and sorry, and Mike, he knows that Mike died. That's true. But other than that, you know, so he could just be referring to the fact that earn the fact that I've given my life for you. Not necessarily that everyone has. You know, I'm giving over to you know, the burden of you know, remembering what I did for you.
Well, like I said, yes, I think the this means everything we've just gone through in just in terms of the experience.
Okay, makes sense. Okay, you're starting to say something about his
Yeah,
eyes.
I thought it was a great choice for Tom Hanks, but it's so hard when you do take after take, when you reset the cameras, to watch the quote light go out in his eyes. I think as an actor, to be able to do that, for his eyes to look like they were locked on Ryan and they looked alive, and then somehow by having his eyes kind of just his lids close only a fraction, but they're still open, but you sense that they go completely like dead, like he's just blank. But then when we get another shot, they're closed. And I liked the eyes open. I wish she had kept them, but then maybe it would have been weird. When you have the reverse angle and everybody comes, you know, in and you realize he is dead, but it's a continuity thing in my head because the last moment we had, his eyes were still open when he died, and then we have another shot and now there's another closed.
No, they're still open. They're just not completely open.
When you look at right at
They're
24, it doesn't look like they're still open.
it does, it does, it does. They're not closed. They're not closed. They're half open at this
Maybe
point.
you got a
I
better
don't know what
screen.
I don't know what's holding them open, but you know, because if he's dead, he's got no muscle movement, but I don't know. Not really sure.
Maybe he did. Okay, I see it. It's just like that first angle, it looked like they were closed. And then when he goes down to pick up the paper and I don't know, maybe he opened his eyes again or maybe the camera caught it better.
Maybe it was just a different take, you know. Who
I will
knows?
say, I still love to convey the moment of death. I mean, that it's amazing. Because when you watch it, especially if you watch like we're doing 1 minute at a time, it looks literally like you're watching his last breath. We've
Correct.
watched a lot of people die and whatever in movies, but for some reason, maybe because it's so soft and quiet and he's not
Well, as you said,
breathing
this, you
hard.
watch the lights go out. You see the lights go out in his eyes because he's just staring at him.
I mean, that's literally the way to say it. You see the life leave his eyes. Now, obviously, Tom Hanks did not die making this movie, but to convey that the way he did, super powerful and just amazing.
He does a great job with that. And then Ryben, you know, kneels down next to him and realizes, okay, that you know, that there's nothing he can do here. He knows that Miller's gone. Now, it's very interesting though, because Ryben has throughout most of the movie been you know, been at odds with Miller. And you know, to get an emotional response from him at this point is nice. It shows that he has a good arc also that he's, you know, we already knew that he changed his mind about saving Ryan when, you know, he gives a nod to Ryan at right before the battle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he knows, okay, there's, I'm glad that we're here. I'm glad that we're doing this, that type of thing. But here, you know, he's, you know, dealing with Miller. And then I love how the camera then pans down to Miller's hand.
Yeah.
And it's as if Ryben is looking at his hand also at this point. You know, because throughout, for anyone who wasn't paying attention, so throughout the entire movie, at moments of calm, that's when Miller's hand was always shaking. It was slightly twitching and stuff like that. You know, when he was in the middle of battle and everything like that, everything was fine. But when he was not, that's when he was getting these reactions, you know, from in his hand. And, you know, Ryben now knows that he's dead because his hand is not shaking when he's in a calm place.
Yeah.
Which it's an interesting choice that Spielberg used to give us this scene like that. I mean, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not.
Well, I think in the very beginning, when you see it happen on the boat, you get the idea of this is somebody who's got a little bit of, I'm going to call it trauma, but I guess that's the closest word, is manifesting itself in a physical jitter. His hand mm-hmm. gets the shakes, and he tries to shake it out. Literally, he'll see later, he'll try to like massage it out, but it's almost yeah. like it's a psychosomatic thing. The recognition, I'm going into another, could be my last day on Earth fight. It could be something that, and so he's got the nervous jitter that shows itself. And yeah, throughout, we see it multiple times, almost like it's a precursor of something bad's about to happen. This is the calm before the storm, and my body's already reacting. And like you said, it's pretty clear now. He hasn't moved at all. And no touch. Right.
Yes. Completely. And as Ryben is looking at him, then the narration begins. So I'm just going to quickly go through the narration, and then we'll go back to what's being shown, you know, on the screen at the time. We hear that it's the voice of Marshall, you know, played by Harv Presnell. My dear Mrs. Ryan, it's with the most profound sense of joy that I write to inform you your son, Private James Ryan, is well and at this very moment on his way home from European battlefields. Reports from the front indicate James did his duty in combat with great courage and steadfast dedication, even after he was informed of the tragic loss your family has suffered in. And that's where the narration ends in this minute. We'll have to continue with that when we get back tomorrow on Memorial Day to talk about the rest of that, which will be very fitting of the way that you know that has fit together. But also, if you now look at what's going on in the, you know, on screen as this is being told, so Ryben then starts rifling through you know, this dead guy's pockets. He opens up the, you know, the pocket and pulls out a piece of paper. Now, the question is, and the debate will remain because we don't know the truth, what the final answer is here. Do you believe that the letter that he has taken out of Miller's pocket is a letter from Miller? Or is that Caparzo's letter that Wade was rewriting and then Miller took from Wade's pocket?
Oh, I never thought of it that way. I always I assumed from what we saw earlier in the movie when Caparzo died and then they didn't want to send the letter home to his family with blood on it. I just assumed every GI wrote their final letter and had it on them. And this was sort of like the honor among the rest of the soldiers that if I fall, please send my letter home. So correct. I assume this 100%. Is his letter. I think this is Miller's letter.
Right. I don't know the answer to that because there's no way of us ever knowing what's really in, you know, what's in the pocket.
No, but I think if we go with the context clues of what happened to Caparzo earlier, I think you can assume every GI or most would probably have written. So that way they could have articulated their final words to their family, their loved ones, their parents, whoever. So, and everyone just kind of knew where to go look for that letter if they fell in combat.
Correct. I agree with you on that. But the question is that, you know, so what happened with Kaparsa's letter then?
I don't know. They've had stops along the way. For all we know, they gave it to somebody else once they recopied the letter and it's been sent. I never thought of him as holding it this whole time.
Right. Again, we did see that after Wade died, Miller took a letter out of his pocket. Whether maybe it was Wade's letter at that point also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the question. There's no way of us knowing the true answer here.
It feels like if it was the Kaparsa letter that's been playing ping pong, then his character should have been much more important and shouldn't have been kicked off so early. I think the impression is every GI wrote their farewell letter, hoping that they never had to send it.
Right. Okay.
And I don't know. I mean, from a military history perspective, there could be somebody listening who goes, well, of course that's what they did. If you had read this book, you would have known. I'm just going with the context clues of the movie.
Right. Again, my assumption is that you are correct, that every soldier would have a letter that they, you know, I guess a last will and testament type of thing, letter that they want to give over to their family if something happens to them. But then, mm-hmm. again, the question remains, you know, so what happened to Kaparsa's letter? that what or we already knew was moving from person to person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I say, again, we'll never know the true answer to that.
I will tell you, what's his name? Edward Burns. His acting here, because he's been competent through the whole movie, but he's never really had to show this, at least not to the degree that he manages to give us that soldier who's right on the tipping point. Is he going to start crying or not? And he doesn't know how to really process this fully. I mean, he does a great job here in this moment of just trying to hold the letter. What do I do? And you feel the weight and the pain that's on his shoulders all of a sudden, or in his eyes and his head. Again, this movie's so good. There's these little moments. It's not overacted, but it's so genuine and real. You get the feeling you're watching somebody trying to come to grips with somebody may have fought with, but you think they've served. They're brothers in arms. I mean, they're a band of brothers, right? And
yeah.
And the pain on his face of seeing this guy that he probably thought was never going to die after all they've been through. And yet it's so powerful.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Again, I love Ed Burns in general, and I think he's amazing in this movie. And he really is able to get the range in this particular scene, you know, mm-hmm. And you know, where he doesn't know how to really react. As he's putting, and do you notice where he's putting the letter? He's putting the letter in the same pocket on his shirt, which means mm-hmm. that if he gets shot by a sniper within minutes, someone's going to pull out that letter and think that it's, you know, that it's Rygen's letter.
Or there'll be two in there.
maybe. Is it maybe the pocket is supposed to be like a mailbox type of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and the thing that I think Edward Burns does, and I don't know if he, I don't know if this is where I wish you were like had an onset. What was the direction? What was the notes? But he looks out, he looks down at Miller, then down at the letter. Then he kind of looks back like, okay, I'm going to go up the road. Then he's back to the letter. And then he does it all over again. He looks out, he looks down, and then he puts it in like he follows almost like he's caught in this routine of like, I'm looking down the road. Now I'm looking at Miller. Now I'm looking at the letter. Now I'm looking behind me. Now I'm looking down the road. Now I'm looking at the letter. And it's that sense of the person who doesn't know what to do right now. He's just kind of lost.
Well, again, he's the one now in charge.
There is that, but I just it's a nice moment with all this fighting and all the action and these action sequences in the movie, while brutal, are action pieces. It's just based on reality versus a, you know, a psychological thriller or a, you know, a chase movie or anything like that. Your typical, you know, mindless action movie, but to have a moment like this where you've got so much happening and no sound from the actor, just the voiceover. And it's almost like you're trying to, it's almost like, is the words that Marshall is reading, the letter to Mrs. Ryan, could this have been read right there for Miller? Could have been read for any of the people. And it's almost like Edward Burns, who's still alive, is going to be like the same reaction that maybe the mom is and everybody that gets one of these letters. How do you react when you're reading a letter like you're getting?
Right. It's true. I completely agree with you. I mean, it's funny, you know, and I talked a little about this last week, you know, that it says that he fought, he did his duty in combat with great courage and steadfast dedication, even though, you know, during the end of this battle, he was in a fetal position, crying the whole time. But okay, we can, you know, we'll say that majority of the time he acted that way. He acted properly.
Are you dogging on Matt Damon?
I'm dogging on the fact that they had to give us a scene with Ryan in a fetal position crying. I think that was completely not necessary, and I think it just takes down whatever we would possibly think about the character. So I just try to remember. I try to not remember that scene, you know, from that perspective.
Interesting. Obviously, I was not here when you were doing the in-depth minute by minute. I'll have to go back and watch that because I do remember that. I almost felt like it's the desperation of somebody who just, this is it. What do you do? Everybody's going to react differently. But he did survive. He did make it. And so it doesn't leave us with the sense of how heroic is he. But he did things throughout the fight.
A few things. You know, he's the one who had the idea of using the mortar grenades. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I don't forget Ryan Miller was like, "You stay by me, Ryan."
That's right. He doesn't really have much for him to do beyond that. It's true. I agree. So one of the things that I've been doing over the course of this Battle of Rommel is trying to figure out how many soldiers were left to defend Rommel, and unfortunately, the only way that we could do that is by counting the character deaths. So this. A spoiler for anybody, this is basically the last death of the movie, but, you know, with Miller passing away, so we add another one and we're up to 19.
So that's 19, 19 deaths we saw through the fight. And yes, obviously there were still some people left.
We know three that are still alive at least. Mm-hmm. Okay. You have Ryan and Upham.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know anyone else who's been there. So it basically means that they had, let's say, 22 guys at least that were there, and six of them were the ones who showed up, you know, to help, you know, Miller and his men.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, that means, according to that math, there were 16 guys that were left to defend Rommel, and if they took Ryan with them, they would have been left with 15. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously it helped to have the extra six.
Especially numbers wise.
Especially numbers wise, because if you only had 16 and 19 were to die, it would be a little more difficult to do it that way.
I would say the math doesn't work out for you in that one.
No, math doesn't work.
I do remember watching this scene with my dad when the very first time I built my first version of home theater, because this was one of those movies you could watch in the surround sound. And if you had it tuned right in your room, the sound, the audio quality was amazing. It was just something you just watch and you just, and I know it's a trope, but the idea of the last, you know, we're going to, the bridge too far kind of mentality, like you're just assuming this is a suicide mission, that no one's going to make it. And yet you still watch it hoping they're going to make it. And in this case, a few of them do, but it was a near suicide mission where nearly everyone did die.
Yes.
And honestly, correct. had the wrong plane showed up, if the P-47s had showed up, maybe they would have gotten there sooner, but you know. The fact that the air support
faster,
happened,
so, you know,
and then, of course, with the other troops coming in, they were being reinforced, makes you also wonder, had they just pulled back 30 minutes before and say, okay, let them take Rommel, we've got reinforcements coming, and then we'll have a lot more, but I guess they didn't know.
Correct.
There's a lot of stories about that in war and stuff, that if they had just waited one more day, or if they had not gone in, you know, they would have been joined by more troops. But, you know, the difference between victory and tragedy sometimes is the difference of a day.
Okay, but you also never know. You don't know what would have happened over the course of that day before. I mean, again, you could talk about the Alamo the same way, you know, the real Alamo, You know, if they would have just been able to hold off for one more day, then they would have gotten more, you know, more reinforcements to help them and stuff like that. You know,
yeah. The irony about the Alamo is they were defending a church, but it was no real strategic value. They just didn't want to give it up. Sam Houston had all of his troops coming up. They were 2 weeks out. Had everybody just left, they could have joined Houston's army and they would have mowed down what was left.
Santa Ana's men.
But there is something that is uniquely that American fighting spirit, even though it was a dumb move militarily. It has become a so funny how we just jumped on this. It became the rallying cry for troops. Remember the Alamo.
That's right. Well, in this movie, they also mentioned it as the Alamo. The Alamo is, you know, the place where they all retreated to before they were getting ready to blow the bridge.
Yeah, they're going to make their final stand.
That's right.
Yeah, fun fact, by the way, I don't know if you've ever been to San Antonio, Texas, where the Alamo is.
I have, and I was at the Alamo once also.
Oh, excellent. I thought this was crazy that we still have such reverence for that building. There is a code, a construction code in the San Antonio statutes that if you build a building of a certain height, that the shadow of the sun if your building is going to cast a shadow, that shadow can never hit the Alamo. They never want the Alamo in shadow. And there was a story of a hotel that was going up and they had to stop at, it was supposed to be like a 23-story hotel and they had to stop at 13. Because when they started construction, they're like, you do know that if you build it any taller, your building's going to cast a shadow and you're not allowed by law to have a building cast a shadow on the Alamo.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I never knew that. I actually was in two hotels in San Antonio, but I never thought about the fact of how high they could be.
Yep. Depending how close they are. And I think it was a Hilton, if I remember correctly. And so they had to stop construction and it was half the size they wanted. But it's so crazy how did nobody check on that? But it was halfway through construction. They said, you know, you can't go any taller than this.
Interesting. So I was there 16 years ago for a conference, and I actually was in two hotels because they screwed up in the first hotel, and they only booked me for 2 nights instead of 3 nights or something like that. Mm. But when I was there for the two, first of all, it was a brand new hotel, so I got to be the first person to sleep in that room and then that bed. You know, it was very cool.
Nice.
And there were like rooms that didn't have toilets in them yet. You know, they were really just getting ready to put everything, you know, put on the final touches and things.
That's cool. Now, when you went, you said 16 years ago, was the Riverwalk a big thing down there in San Antonio where they had all the restaurants and everything?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was in 2009, I believe, when I was there.
I'll tell you what. My wife and I went there last year. It was our first time. And that was a fun few days. You got to have extra money because they want to charge you like, you know, tooth and nail for everything because it's a touristy kind of a thing. But we loved being down by the Riverwalk and being in San Antonio for a little. We were there for the eclipse last year, the total eclipse. And it was cool. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that story. But no, I remember that I even cut out on one of the sessions in the conference because I wanted to go see the Alamo, you know. And I then met this couple that were also there, that were he was I think a principal and she was a teacher, and you know I spent a few hours with them, you know, both in the Alamo and then we went to like a few other museums around there also just to see some other cool stuff that was going on. It was a cool experience. Yeah, because I said to myself, I'm in San Antonio. I'll never be in San Antonio again, probably in my life. You know, how can I not go to the Alamo if I'm such a fan of the John Wayne movie, you know, The Alamo, and know so much about it? You know, you got to take the time to do it.
100%. I would say anybody listening, even if you don't live in the United States, it's one of those historic places that means so much to the history that you got to go see it.
Correct. I agree. All right. So, Alan, did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, I think we covered it. And I'm almost getting a little sad. I almost feel like, should I just drag this out simply because I know we're getting closer and closer to the end? And that kind of – I always feel that way when we get to the end of these projects. It's like, oh, but I want to talk a little bit more just for the fun of talking.
Yeah, well, you got two more days. You know, you'll be back for Memorial Day and the day after Memorial Day. So we'll see what we have to talk about there.
And thank you as well for I know when you and I talked at the beginning of the season, I kind of wanted to do this, kind of hit the the beginning, the transition, and then the end. But I also love the fact that I'm going to actually get Memorial Day as well. So that's going to be a little special tomorrow.
There you go. Excellent. All right. So why don't you tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, if you want to listen, I do a daily news talk show. It's about the news of the day. It's the Alan Sanders Show. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find me on Facebook, X, Instagram, Getter, Truth Social, and YouTube. Just look for The Alan Sanders Show.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. My solitude.